move on now to Fiona Chateau. And I will just quickly introduce Fiona. Fiona Chateau is a digital media specialist with a particular affection for 3D modelling and game art. After a long career at ABC TV, she worked for Strategic Studies Group in 1999 to 2001, before moving to the UK to work with the BBC in e-learning for the Open University. She returned to Australia in 2006 and completed a PhD in design for pedagogy patterns for e-learning in 2012 with the University of Sydney. My word, what a topic. And she is currently teaching at the Northern Sydney Institute in Gaming and continues to have an active interest in gaming, gaming history, and gamification for and e-learning. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Fiona, and Dr. Fiona, I guess. It never gets old, does it? Right, I've got a story to tell you. And the story that I've got to tell you is about Australia's second oldest gaming company. Now, we've just heard from Veronica, and she was involved with Australia's oldest gaming company. The second oldest gaming company was incorporated. Putting a date on these things is sometimes difficult. We'll say 1983, although the prime candidates of the company probably got together in late 81 and all through 82, and they got the paperwork done in 83. And the story that I've got to tell you is not the story of the gaming company per se. Of course, the history's involved with all of that. The story that I've got to tell you is the development of computer graphics through time. And this story is also a personal story, because as you heard from the introduction, I also worked for SSG for a brief period, so you'll get to hear some of my journey through time as part of this presentation. So the presentation is from 4-colour machines to 8-bit colour display. So I'm not going right up to the current time. I'm staying in the noughties here in this presentation. From 280 by 192 pixels, now I'm talking something which on today's screens is absolutely tiny, to 1024 by 768 pixels and beyond. We're talking about 25 years of strategy game development. Now, Veronica moved on to other things. SSG have been faithful for all this time. So in the beginning, they formed in around 1982. They incorporated themselves in 1983. And the two prime protagonists in this story, one of his name is Roger Keating, and we have the pleasure of having him in the audience today. He's sitting right here. Roger, identify yourself. There he is, trying to be shy. Now, Roger was a teacher at the Cranbrook School and got the bug for computer programming and games and left teaching to develop his own games through Keating Computer Services and from 1979 through till about 1981-82. And he was being described as being a mild-mannered maths teacher. He actually got a gentleman by the name of Ian Trout to help him with some game testing. Now, Ian Trout was a board gamer and a strategy gamer. A hardcore strategy gamer is one way of describing Ian. He was also the founder of Napoleon's Bookshop, which was in Pitt Street here in Sydney for many, many years. And his knowledge and understanding of military history is probably bar none, with the possible exception of Grigor, who's also in the room today. In the beginning, they got themselves together and they started making a game. There were two of them. Their first game was released in 1983. It was called Reach for the Stars. It was later to be described, now this description came quite a few years later, as the first of the 4X genre of games. Explore, expand, exploit, exterminate. The game was a board game based on a board game called Stellar Conquest. Now, SSG were in negotiations with the people who had made Stellar Conquest. Unfortunately, the negotiations broke down, so SSG went, oh, what the hell, we're going to make our own game. So that's what they did. Now, in the early days of SSG, Roger was both artist and programmer, and he was working on the Apple II computer. And there he is, so you might be able to recognise him. Here's a picture of him, he's here today. Now, the Apple II at the time boasted 4 colours as a display. So all they had to work with on the computer screen was four colours, plus black and white. They had 48 kilobytes of random access memory. There was altogether 64 megabytes, but a lot of that was taken up by the Apple II operating system. So, of course, Roger decided to write his own operating system to get rid of the operating system so his game would play faster. He managed to whittle down the amount of memory that the machine was using down to about 4 kilobytes. So that left 60 for him to use to create the game. So it ran extremely fast. Well, in today's standards, not fast at all, because it's a tiny game. But in terms of what was happening at the time, it was running extremely fast, a lot faster than a lot of the contemporary computer games. Now, the focus on SSG's games was on the gameplay. Both Ian and Roger felt that gameplay was extremely important. So the emphasis on the graphical quality is not as high, but the complexity of the game was extremely high. Now, the Apple II machines at the time, as I said, had four colours, 64 kilobytes of memory, rewriting the operating system. Roger was both programmer and artist for the game. Now, I think if you talk to Roger today, he'll probably tell you he has no artistic ability whatsoever. I beg to differ. Now, he wrote the games in machine code, because using BASIC at the time basically used up too many of the system's resources, and he wanted his game to actually play. Having made it in machine code, it made the port across to the Commodore 64 machine a lot easier. Now, the Commodore 64 machines were a slightly larger pixel size on the screens, still only four colour graphics, but I think you could bodge it so that you could have seven altogether in the game. Porting was a lot easier using machine code, but also a lot more challenging writing it that way. I think anybody who's written in machine code would agree. There were no graphics programs at all at the time. There was no such things as file formats. Graphics were either a 0-1 combination for a black and white game or two bits for colour. The artists, that would be Roger, created the game elements using a piece of graph paper and using grid squares and coloured pencils, and they would colour in the squares to create the little pieces of artwork. This is actually two screenshots that you can actually see of the game. The first one is one of the game menu screens, and the bottom is actually the gameplay. That's the sophistication of the graphics that we're seeing at the time. Very, very simple. The graphics, because they were written into the database, took days to write, but because they were directly coming from a database and they were written in machine code, they were very fast on the screen, so they could move around. Now, the game, Reach for the Stars, could be played by up to four people, any or all of whom could be played by the computer. Keating at the time described the subtlety of the computer system was to provide games where they interact with people. The computer supports the game environment and offers assistance to the players, but does not appear as a monolithic opponent, because there's nothing worse than beating your head against an AI that's superior to yours in a computer game. So this is one of the reasons, I believe, why the game was so popular. And I've got another quote from Roger. War is something in which a human is in his element. He is aggressive, intuitive, often brilliant, sometimes stupid. To get a computer to behave like that is very hard, because it means taking routines and trying to turn them into intuitive devices. It was a four-player game, as I mentioned. All of the computer players were named after Australian politicians at the time. Now, if anybody's got any knowledge of Australian political history, Bill Hayden was known as a drover's dog by the popular media of the time, and the drover's dog became one of the computer players in Reach for the Stars. Strategy took up to about 60% of processing power, so again, the emphasis was not on the graphics. Now, here's the figures. Reach for the Stars sold between 300 and 400,000 units over time. Now, we're talking about subsequent releases. We're talking about Reach for the Stars 2. They're selling at $50 to $60 per unit. And according to Roger, it cost approximately $5 to make the floppy disks and the artwork and get it out there. So SSG were doing rather well. And one of the reasons why they did well, and I'm not saying that they didn't make a killer game, because they so did, but it was at a time of change, and these changes kind of happened cyclically through the history of computing. In 1982, the year before Reach for the Stars was released, Atari sales, these were game console sales, were down 50%. And the sales of the Atari games engine crumbled in 1983. Now, this in Games Archive commentary has been put down to the port of the Pac-Man, that was a Namco game, very popular in arcades at the time. It was ported across to the Atari, and Atari made the bizarre step of actually publishing more copies of the game than they actually had machines to play it on. So that was a bit of a disaster for Atari. Mattel's Intellivision were also seeing massive losses at the time. At the same time, the Commodore 64 sales were at 17 to 22 million units. Apple II had just sold its millionth unit. So Commodore 64 was much more popular than the Apple, and PC-type games now continue to be so. Carriers at War was SSG's second game, and according to Roger, sold even better than Reach for the Stars. They used pretty much the same techniques as Reach for the Stars. They used deliberately very simplified graphics for smooth gameplay. They used an 84 by 72 hex grid to create the maps, and each hex was mapped to 20 nautical miles. So what we're talking about at Carriers at War, they were using real representations of terrain and landscapes that exist in the world, and they were accurate. Now, by simplifying the processes into a megahex system, which comprises nine small hexes, they were able to simplify the processing that takes to place these hexes on the screen and allow for the enormous amounts of aircraft carriers and aeroplanes they had in this game. They had four maps. They had the North Pacific, which included Pearl Harbor and the Midway scenarios, South Pacific and the Coral Sea, Western Pacific, and they also had a blank map, which allowed people like you and me to actually make our own scenarios and maps, which was a bit of a good thing. So for the Apple II and Commodore 64 games, now I'm not going to go in this talk about all of the games SSG has made, because I've made an awful lot, but for the ones for these particular platforms, Reach for the Stars was released in 83, Carriers at War 84, Europe Ablaze 85, Battlefront 86, Russia, Halls of Montezuma, Decisive Battles of the American World War Volume 1, they had Volume 2 and Volume 3 later on, Battles in Normandy, but it was 1985, we're talking the third one in the list, Europe Ablaze, that Roger decided that doing artwork really wasn't for him, and they started hiring their very first art directors and artists. 1986 saw the introduction, I mean, are they, I like to call them evil wizards or evil minds. These are the people who come up with the scenarios for the game. Ian was the main AI guy for the game from the beginning of the company. They employed a gentleman by the name of Grigor Wiley in 1986 to work as a producer for the games as well. So, around 1985, around about the same time as Europe Ablaze, we saw Apple losing market power. Well, they were never really up there with the Commodore 64, but the market was flip-flopping again, and we're seeing the rise of the IBM PC. It's DOS days. And the whole market turned to become an IBM PC-dominated market. So over time and over the next 5 years, SSG were turning the development platforms from the Apple Mac and Apple II and the Apple later Apple machines onto the PC development platform. So generally after the 1990, they developed onwards on the PC. Battlefront was SSG's fourth game. It was made in 14 weeks, which is a ridiculously short time for any sort of game development, because they'd been working on a game called The Road to a Potomac, I think that's how you pronounce it, Roger's laughing because I've said it wrong, which was meant to be an entire Civil War game to do with the American Civil War. Now, trying to do a game based on just one battle of the Civil War is difficult enough. Now, nothing to say that Ian and Roger weren't ambitious. It was an incredibly complicated task. And of course, with the two of them, maybe a few more working on it, it was almost impossible. And it proved to be so. They'd stalled. They weren't going anywhere and they're losing money and they're going broke. Roger, not Roger, Ian took a holiday, he went on a short cruise, and while he was away, Roger wrote a design document and presented it to Ian on his return from his holiday, of which Ian said, I can imagine him saying, give that to me, I'll think about that. And the very next day, he completely rewritten the design document, and it became the roadmap for the Battlefront game. Again, the units and terrains were made from these hex-shaped icons. The difference between this game and a lot of the earlier games was that a lot of the AI remained on the floppy disk. So whenever they needed the AI, they would call it from the floppy disk. And that allowed them to have more processing available to them and more data available to them. Now, as you can see, these games that you see the screenshots of are also Battlefront games. I think they made eight Battlefront games. There it is on the screen, from 1986 to 1992. It saw the transition from 4-colour to 16-colour graphics. So we're seeing now, as Roger said, you need an artist to make anything look good in 16 colours. They developed them on the Apple II, Commodore 64, the Commodore 128, and moved across to the PC-DOS and the Apple Macintosh. So now we're moving into computer games. I don't know about you guys, but these are starting to become familiar in terms of machines that I understand. Deluxe Paint. 5 minutes, we're good and doing fine. Deluxe Paint was the first graphics program. Well, Roger discounts this. He says it's not the first one used by SSG, but it was certainly the first one used by SSG artists for the games. It was a program released in 1985 by EA. It was the DOS port across to the IBM PC became the standard graphics manipulation package or program of the 1990s. The second release of the Reach for the Stars, you can see the screen. It's a lot more complicated. The graphics are an awful lot better. Still not too many colours. I think you can see 16 colours there if you look hard enough. But better. Lots of issues. Now, this is where Grigor's memory comes in handy. Thank you, Grigor. Lots of issues to do with non-standardization of the graphics cards. What would happen is a graphic card would get released, people would put it on their machine thinking wonderful things, and then the games wouldn't work. So this is, I remember this as a problem. The minute you upgraded, you had to go and get a new game. Higher bit depth graphics were available. Now, the 16 kilobyte memory machines that we're talking about here had bit depth graphics. You could have between 512 and 32,600 and 768 graphics. So a lot more available to the artists. Steve Faulkner, Melbourne boy, works here in Melbourne. You should look him up. He's a bit of a genius. Was a young man who sent his game to SSG on spec. It was a fantasy game. And SSG looked at it and said, well, this is not a hardcore battle game. And not really interested in this, and Ian gave it to his son to play. And after a week or two, the son came back and said, actually, this is a really good game. I'm having lots of fun playing this, and it's, you know, it's very good. It was created D-Paint. It was pixel art, as you can see. It has 16 colours. SSG had a look at it and decided to use their game military mechanics to drive the fantasy game. So the mechanics were rewritten using military AI and mechanics, but the graphics remained Steve Faulkner's. It's a turn-based game. It could be single or multiplayer. I think Graham Whittle was the person who did the art. He's actually working, he's down in Tasmania, I believe, at this point in time. Eight different, look, the reason I'm going into this is I really like this game. It's one of my favourites. So we had eight sides to play with. We had the good guys, the Syrians, the storm giants, the grain dwarves, the orves, the elverly, Celentines, they liked water, horse lords, and Lord Bane, of course, who was a evil guy that you really didn't have to have anything to do with, but he was devastating because he could kill anybody, resurrect anybody. Wonderful, wonderful character. 2 minutes. Oh gosh, I'm going to have to rush. 1990, we're now wholly on the PC development. Ian decided to develop a thing called the Carriers at War Construction Kit, which allowed players to make their own graphics. This construction kit was developed by Ian. He got the artists, and in this case it was Steve Ford predominantly. Nick Strathopoulos was also art director at the time, and he did a few airplanes. They developed these art boards in D-Paint, and that was given to the people, sold to the people to use, and they could actually pick up the pieces and assemble their own ships and then integrate their own carriers, if you like, into the game. 1995, we saw Alistair Lockhart move to SSG, and he eventually was to become art director. And at the same time, he was desperately trying to make pixel graphics for the games. He was learning Photoshop. And I included this shot. I really like this one because you can see the difference in the technologies and the techniques. In the foreground, you've got the kind of beautiful Photoshop art. And in the background, you've got the D-Paint terrain graphics. And there's a very big contrast in styles, which is entirely to do with graphics programming and graphics program's abilities. Photoshop became faster, more efficient. And then we come to the millennium, and this is where I come into the scene. I was employed by SSG in late 1999 to work on Warlords Battlecry, which was their first real-time strategy game. It marked a dramatic change for SSG from 2D to 3D generated sprites. We were working on IBM Pentium 3 machines. Look, we were capable of using 24-bit graphics, but I think generally our graphics were actually 8-bit. We were capable of running 1024 by 768, but I think the game ran a little smaller. Often the machines are capable of doing things and we struggle to keep up. We used 3DS Studio Max 3.1, Photoshop 5 to create the graphics, Character Studio plugin for rigging, interface artwork done in Photoshop. I just wanted to show you the development process. We started often with an existing mesh, then we would build the 3D art elements and then texture using Photoshop, using box, edge, or patch modeling. We'd then detach them for the mapping, and you can see the texture maps for that particular character. And we would paint these in Photoshops. Because it was a sprite-based game, we'd render them out as sprites and then put those little pre-rendered sprites into the game. And here you see this particular character in Reach for the Stars 2, placed into the games, and you could, the joy of it, you could render them in different angles. Animating the characters was a bit of a challenge. We couldn't use perspective. We had to make these magenta-coloured sprite sheets, which allowed, basically, we key out the magenta and everything else would be shown, so we couldn't have magenta in our graphics at all. We composited them with a little utility that Steve Faulkner wrote, creating a bitmap file and then putting them in the game. We had very limited pixel sizes. We could only have 16 frames for the walk cycle, so the guys walked really fast. Although I did notice that they cheated down in Melbourne and they made a few of the beasties a bit slower. They wouldn't let me have more than 16 frames, I remember that. They were rendered at a 45-degree angle. It was very much a challenge to get convincing animations to happen in 16 frames, let me tell you. Now, these bitmaps, and they were bitmaps, and bitmaps are quite low quality, were then integrated into the games. We also used particle effects for blood spurts and magic. And in this case, I linked a particle emitter to the character's hands and then rendered the particles as a video post glow. Now, 2003 saw SSG split. Yeah, two more seconds. SSG in Sydney returned to hardcore war gaming. Steve Faulkner down in here in Melbourne became Infinite Interactive. He was the one who published Warlords 4 and Warlords Battlecry 2. That's box art from Russia. That's me on the cover. How much fun is that? SSG, I left the company by this stage. I was off in England doing e-learning. They went back to 2D, and they've done a number of games since. And kind of the thing that's put a bit of a halt to us is that the lovely Ian Trout passed away in 2011. So SSG have been a bit stalled ever since and haven't actually published a game since the passing of the lovely Ian Trout. It's probably my fault. I gave them jobs. They're working for us at the Northern Sydney Institute teaching the next generation of gamers. But if you give them a bit of a push along today, I'm sure they'll get a new game out next year. Thank you.